Before long, we'll be where it would have taken mankind millions of years of learning to reach.
And what will Mitchell learn on getting there? Will he know what to do with his power?
That's the big agenda here, is undermining the whole idea of journalism, and that's the real thing to worry about.
The good old Ministry of Truth has another outlet.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence instead of respecting it, improving it, challenging it. But not here. Where knowledge is power, this is Powerful Radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth. Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepanchuk. On today's show, we'll feature an interview with Adam Kader from the Worker Center of Arise Chicago to discuss the center's work with assisting poor immigrant workers in Chicago to fight for their rights. But now, a commentary from the website Black Agenda Report.
In 1968, the Black Student Union at San Francisco State University, in conjunction with other activists and faculty, demanded the establishment of a Black Studies program. The next year, the Black Studies program became a department. 40 years later, as many as 350 colleges and universities offer majors, minors, and degrees in Black, African American, Africana, and related studies, according to Dr. James Turner of Cornell University's Africana Studies and Research Center. Just like the movement and politics that it sprang from, Black Studies is under assault as irrelevant in today's times. The truth is, Black Studies has always been in conflict with the powers that be, on campus and in the wider world. It was born that way, out of a movement and a people that were trying to find a way out of their own oppression and the ills afflicting humanity at large. Only fools and the enemy can claim that this mission has been accomplished and that Black voices should stand down in academia or anywhere else. Black Studies grew out of Black activism, and when the discipline is done well, it leads to greater and more effective activism while deepening our understanding of the global society. This is, by definition, dangerous to those who profit from the status quo and the lies that prop up privilege. Those who have achieved power and inherited privilege through systemic racial oppression are the last ones to want to fund a discipline that examines past and present oppression. Naturally, opponents of Black Studies have always tried to marginalize it as a kind of special dispensation unworthy of accreditation and resources. In the age of Obama, hostile forces proclaim Black Studies to be an obstacle on the road to race neutrality, another way of saying that those who illuminate and struggle against a problem are themselves the source of the problem. In a society that is truly committed to social justice, Black Studies would be viewed in much the same way as the study of medicine, whose ultimate purpose is to promote the health of human beings and to combat the diseases that plague us. Medicine ameliorates human misery and seeks ways to make possible the maximum fulfillment of life for the greatest number of people. So does the struggle for social justice and its academic arm, Black Studies. Black Studies provides a unique prism through which to identify that which ails us in the United States and beyond. When Black Studies is devalued, Black people are devalued, and all of humanity is diminished. Those who think we are already liberated and can now dispense with Black Studies are the ones most in need of an education. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to www.blackagendareport.com.
You're listening to The Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepanchuk. We now feature an interview with Adam Kader from the Worker Center of Arise Chicago to discuss the center's work with assisting poor immigrant workers in Chicago to fight for their rights. Since 2002, the Worker Center has partnered with over 2,000 workers to recover over $3.8 million in owed wages and compensation. The following interview took place at Ventrello's Cafe in Chicago on Saturday, September 19th, 2009. We are joined by Adam Cater. Adam Cater is the director of the Worker Center at Arise Chicago, and he is joining us here in Chicago. So, Adam, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Let's begin with the very basics. The Worker Center at Arise Chicago. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Sure. So we're one of three programs at Arise. We were started in 2002 by a Guatemalan and a Polish immigrant, and with the mission of meeting with workers to help them understand their rights and help them figure out ways in order to defend them at work. And to this day, we are still doing that and have grown to involve people as members of the organization. We're now a membership organization with about 250 people who have committed to our mission.
When you say that the Worker Center is part of Arise Chicago, what's Arise?
Arise was formerly known as the Chicago Interfaith Committee on Worker Issues, and by that long name you can guess why we decided to change it. That was in part. The other part was just to encompass all the various things we're involved in. So Arise, at its very founding, was conceived of as a group of clergy who wanted to raise the voices for the religious community in support of workers, particularly those who wanted to unionize. And that's how we began. Since then, we've branched out to give more direct assistance on campaigns to workers, perhaps not involved in a union campaign. That's part of the Worker Center. On the other, our sister program is called Building Bridges, in which we help people who have historically been excluded from the building trades, you know, well-paying union jobs, to help get them trained, to get into those apprenticeship programs. So that, in a nutshell, that's the organization as a whole.
Is it an acronym?
It's not.
It's not?
Yeah.
Where did the name come from?
You know, it's a good question. We had kind of gone through a long process. We'd received a grant from Firebelly Design, in which they helped us rebrand ourselves, kind of recreate ourselves. And we went through a whole year-long process, and any name we could come up with had basically already been used, which we thought was a good sign. There's enough, you know, groups out there that, you know, workers' rights groups that had the names we were coming up with. So instead of coming up with a descriptive name, trying to capture everything we're about, we said, why not come up with a symbolic name, something that kind of just embodies the spirit of what we're about, and you know, lifting up workers in Chicago is kind of the way we went, as opposed to trying to come up with something that described everything about our group.
Let's talk now about a little bit more, touched on this already, regarding
sure.
some of the history about the Worker Center at Arise Chicago. Mm-hmm. But what would be some examples of some past campaigns and past successes? If I wanted to mention the specific example of what you did,
mm-hmm.
give us some.
Certainly. You know, it's been really interesting. I'd say that we're an experimental place, an experimental worker center, and we've been experimenting for a long time. So we've tried a bunch of different things, been involved in an array of campaigns. You know, one thing we have learned in the long run, though, is that generally, especially in the case of wage theft, which I'm happy to talk a bit more at length about,
mm-hmm.
You know, we found that really direct action has been the most effective and empowering way in which workers can achieve justice in the workplace. So to give you a sense of what a direct action is, you know, generally that means, you know, somehow disrupting the, you know, business as usual at a workplace, and we do that after an employer has not been at all responsive to our appeals. So a recent example that was particularly exciting for us, and I think has helped kind of spread the word about the Worker Center, was homemade pizza, in which a group of workers walked off the job. This was...
You're talking about the local Chicago franchise homemade pizza.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Workers had walked off the job because they were not being paid properly. One of them wasn't making a minimum wage. A couple of them weren't getting paid overtime, and they had discovered actually that the meats that they were using, they worked in the commissary, which was sort of a central place in which they would send ingredients out to the various stores,
mm-hmm.
Was sometimes expired.
They were using expired meats in
correct,
their pizza.
Correct. So when the workers shared that with their supervisors, they said, "Well, you have to use it." Basically, forced them to use it, and the poor workers. I mean, they were. You know, then they came to us, they were like, you know, this is on our conscience here, we don't want the public getting sick on our account, so we walked out. When they contacted the boss the next day, you know, they said, you know, we want our final paycheck, and he said, forget about it, it's ours. So that was kind of just give you a flavor of kind of what are, you know, the severity of some of these issues that we're talking about, and it's not at all an exception, I should say, this is, you know,
yeah.
tragically common. So what we then did is, after being denied any type of response from the management, we had no choice but to do an action, And what we did is at 5 o'clock, the workers, one worker went to each of the different locations across the city. Mm-hmm. And then we brought in some supporters, some community, just people from the community, some religious leaders joined them. And we did a delegation to 6 different locations, called our worker center up in Minnesota that we're affiliated with nationally. They did it at the Minnesota location, all at 5 o'clock at the dinner rush. And had the same message. You know, everyone introduced themselves to the supervisor and said, call your boss, you know, we want to meet to negotiate. And sure enough, within 20 minutes, we had a meeting. Later that week, we had a negotiation. And then the workers were paid, in fact, their last paychecks. The minimum wage violations had been corrected. The company refused to sign a statement that said, we, you know, promise not to use expired ingredients. You know, I don't know what that means for the public, but...
Well, a happy ending. But it's also kind of reflects, and this might be something we may want to touch on. I can think of two directions. One is that it shows that activism works.
Right.
But on the other hand, it also shows that it's a shame that it has to take this kind of direct action. In this case, it's something fairly nonviolent.
Of course.
Where you're bringing people in and you're addressing the management and you're trying to make a presence of a show.
Of course.
But nonetheless, it took some effort and some organizing in order to make that happen. This wasn't the kind of thing that just materialized on its own.
Right. We find that, I mean, often workers will have, you know, they'll have attempted various things before they approach our organization. They'll come to our organization saying, I've tried the following, haven't had any kind of breakthrough. Of course, sometimes, you know, as I said, the first step we do at the work center is make sure people are informed about their rights. Sometimes workers don't know what kind of approach to take. So, so that's sometimes the case. But I think you're exactly right. I mean, that's the way we view it. The thing that I usually like to impress upon people when we talk about the worker center is just how this is not exceptional. This is such a standard. We look across the workplaces in Chicago and we see industries just completely, inundated with this type of abuse. And particularly in any industries in which, any low-wage industries, they tend to be less regulated. Even places like restaurants, right? Chicago's a restaurant city. We've got more restaurants here than in New York City, which I just learned.
Wow.
And, you know, we have a 0% compliance in wage and hour laws from all the restaurants that have contacted us. All the workers who have contacted us from restaurants.
0% wage compliance.
Right. So we're talking about 199
Astounding.
Restaurants in our database in which not a single one of them we know, at least when workers have been contacting us, do not pay overtime, do not pay minimum wage, for example.
Wow.
And there was just a study people may know about, a study that just came out the week of Labor Day, in which they had shown that about two-thirds of the surveyed respondents had experienced some type of wage and hour violation in the past week from being interviewed. And they were interviewing low-wage workers, both native-born and immigrant workers, in Chicago, New York City, and Los Angeles. And that's the kind of non-compliance they found. So
astounding.
Yeah.
You were focusing on this particular example regarding restaurants, but mm-hmm. Are there other industries where this comes into play, or
yeah.
is it just restaurants?
No, absolutely. I mean, restaurants are certainly a major one, and there is a worker center in town, ROC, the Restaurant Opportunity Center, which is attempting to address precisely that industry specifically. Our organization is multi-industry, so that means we get workers from all over are joining our organization as members, predominantly from construction. Restaurants, manufacturing is actually our largest sector represented in our membership, but also home health care, domestic cleaning service, nannying mm-hmm. among our female members, but we see the range. I mean, we have many landscapers that contact our organization, so anything that you can think of in Chicago, we've worked with those types of workers.
And it will tend to, it sounds like, predominantly be communities that are poor and that tend to be typically immigrants, which will mean very often that they don't know English or don't have a complete command of the English language.
Mm-hmm.
And so while that helps as far as increasing diversity of the American population,
mm-hmm.
It also means that there's that increased potential for abuse. Do you find that that's the case?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's really disproportionate, and that's why our outreach historically has been into those communities. That's where we found the most need. Not to say at all that native-born workers aren't heavily exploited in the city. That's just been the more vulnerable populations that we've reached out to. We'd love, though, to see expanding our membership to include many more types of workers. But looking at the sort of succession of different waves of immigrants in the city. I mean, you can just see how newly arrived immigrants are the ones that are exploited, and that's changed historically. But right now, we're seeing them. You know, immigration just tends to be from Latin America and Poland right now in Chicago.
In Chicago, okay.
So,
and you're in particular involved. As we're having an interview in mid-September 2009, you were involved in a campaign at this very moment regarding the recovery of wages. Can you tell us more about what's going on now?
Sure. We're talking about the Builder Center of Chicago, which is an is a company that provides a variety of sort of real estate services, from redevelopment to architects. They have like an architect in-house, things like that. But the workers that we were contacted by were doing sort of maintenance, a variety of maintenance services, painting, waste cleanup, and these guys had, for over an 8-month period, were not being paid, consistently were being underpaid, or not being paid on time. And so, when those workers came to us, we tried to do the things we always do. We tried to reach out to the company. Maybe the company we thought wasn't aware of this practice or something. And we like to give companies the benefit of the doubt. But they really just weren't responsive. And it wasn't until we finally got a hold of them and faxed them basically a letter indicating what we thought were to be the wage violations. We'd gotten sort of a tepid response. Oh, yeah, maybe there's a... maybe we can come up with a payment plan or something, but then it was never followed up on. So what we've decided to do is we did a delegation with two clergy that were in the neighborhood, the workers, of course, and then some of us from Arise Chicago, in which case we demanded that the secretary there call the owner. So on the phone then spoke to a pastor who had come with us, where the pastor explained to him, look, we want to meet to talk about this. So it actually took all of that just to get a meeting with these people.
And how long are we talking as far as time frame?
That was a couple months.
Wow.
So we sat down then, and they said, well, yeah, we owe these workers, but we're broke. And, we were kind of looking around the office and looking at sizing up the furniture and things. And, construction is way in a downturn right now. I don't doubt that this owner's having some serious difficulties financially. At the same time, we're talking about workers that did work over 8 months ago. And this is certainly a lot of money to a worker. We're talking about close to $8,000. But to this company, it really isn't. This company, there's really no excuse for them not to pay this up. And they said, well, maybe we can pay a little bit here and there, but refused to do a payment plan. So that's how that meeting ended. Now, the workers contacted the company once again, and they got the company to agree to $200 a week.
Okay.
Until the full $8,000 we paid.
Right.
And they were paid $200 that day as sort of like a goodwill payment.
Right.
Now, the following Friday, when they showed up, they were told that they were not, or when they contacted the company, they were told they would not get paid anymore whatsoever. The reason being that they said they were tired. They said to the workers, if we don't want anybody calling us, referring to myself, perhaps, to some of the press who were interested in the story. Obviously that's just a cop-out for him not to have to pay.
Mm.
And so what we said, what we did then is we decided to hold a protest this Tuesday at 1 o'clock in order for him to make it known to the public really what's going on at this company, and make it known to him that, this is really unacceptable. And, in our neighborhoods in Chicago here, we can't tolerate an employer who is abusing workers in this way. The owner is an immigrant. He kind of appealed to the workers who are immigrants, saying, I'm just like you guys. I worked my way up. But the workers really don't buy that. And, they say, and we say to Arise Chicago, you have to treat workers with dignity. And this isn't just.
One thing I'm finding that in some of the descriptions of some of these actions that are being undertaken is the involvement of religious clergy. And I can see that as a very both clever but also an intentional tactic, since there's a kind of moral authority imbued
right.
with someone who is of any kind of religious faith, whatever it is, be it a rabbi or a religious imam in Muslim or a priest in the Christian faith.
Yes.
That there's imbued with some authority, and so to bring them in, you're kind of saying to themselves, you're not just irking these workers, you're also irking these people who have moral authority and whose lives are built around a sense of justice.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the intent there?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think that it really just first, is an acknowledgement of what the major religions, do all believe in common, which is that, workers should be treated with dignity, that labor is a sacred thing that needs to be recognized. So I think that, in a sense, it's sort of, it's sort of allowing people to act on that faith, act upon their faith. That's certainly part of what our organization is about. And I think also, like you're saying, workers are not, employers don't respond to their workers' appeals sometimes, and workers simply do need to organize in order for themselves to be heard. And, bringing a community organization that can vouch for them, bringing in religious leaders who can provide that support, that's exactly what it takes sometimes. And, we believe that that's a wonderful thing, that people are choosing to do this.
Situated within the larger context of efforts regarding labor and immigrant rights, it seems like you're smack in the heart of struggles involving both movements. And no doubt that your work is kind of animated by those larger movements there. What are your thoughts with regards to where the Worker Center and the Rise Chicago is situated as far as larger movements for social change on behalf of labor and immigrant rights?
Yeah, great question. I mean, we draw our inspiration from a number of different movements, from a number of different traditions. We look back to the founding of the American labor movement when it was illegal to organize. When workers weren't part of unions but formed committees to improve standards. In Chicago, there's been such a rich tradition of that. Mm-hmm. And so we really identify ourselves in that lineage of the labor movement, sort of the beginnings of it, the fringes of it, and really, what's really pushed the movement to be what it is. I also think that the labor movement, and speaking of the unions particularly, have really come around to the immigrant rights movement. I think it's really come to a head, and I'd like to in part credit my generation for that, in terms of kind of recognizing the global justice movement has really brought a lot of these different voices together. Mm-hmm. Of course, looking at the protests in Seattle as being kind of a watershed moment in which we had...
Talking about the protests against the World Trade Organization ministerial there.
Yes.
Okay.
Looking at, the phrase people like to throw is the turtles and the teamsters together. the environmentalists, the immigrant rights folks. I really think that's just, endemic of our... That's just indicative of what our generation's about, the progressive side of our generation. And so I do think, just this week, the AFL announced their support for immigrant rights, against guest worker programs, about legalization, and I think that's a really important, it's a historic moment that the AFL has decided to do that this week, given that in the past they haven't always, during the passage of NAFTA years, the way in which NAFTA was opposed was not always a progressive framing of the issue. It was sometimes... sometimes anti-immigrant, I think. And so, I think that, the Worker Center movement, which is a younger movement, I think that's sprung from, our generation's thinking, our generation's style of organizing. And I think that we've had an influence on the larger labor movement for that. Yeah. So I'd like to think that, we applaud the unions for being much more attentive to their own membership that's immigrant, looking to the unorganized who are immigrant, and recognizing that really, the future of the labor movement is going to have an immigrant face. That's just the nature of our the way our economy is organized today. If labor is to have a future, it will be an immigrant one. And so I think too that, unions are showing their willingness to be a bit more, to use some of the grassroots tactics, to kind of step out of bureaucracy a bit. The Republic window struggle was a perfect example of how unions are beginning to, take other types of strategies, direct action strategies, which is what we rely on.
Like the sit-in that was taking place at the Republic Windows and Doors factory in Chicago in December, where a number of workers occupied their own factory for about a week, gaining international coverage and ultimately winning the demands that they had set out for.
And given that the union had reached out to Arise Chicago to provide the community support for the Republic Windows occupation, we were the organization that was calling for daily rallies in support of them at noon. I think that shows that there is a legitimacy to the worker centers now, that we're seen as a real partner in the movement, where we can mobilize workers, we can mobilize clergy, we can mobilize community folks, to support those campaigns.
One thought that came to my mind in hearing some of the discussion, particularly regarding the point about there being such widespread violations of, you know, not paying or paying not the full amount or tremendously delayed payments, mm-hmm. that if it's occurring at such a widespread level, obviously some other culprit there. And some people might be apt to think, and this might be a thought that at least animates me, mm-hmm. that there are larger systemic issues at play.
Right.
Especially with the film by Michael Moore, Capitalism, A Love Story, which is all about touching on some of these issues.
Mm-hmm.
This is something where a lot of people are certainly entertaining thoughts about. What are your thoughts with regards to the larger systemic issues regarding capitalism and corporations and markets and the particular struggles that you're involved with mm-hmm. and that the Worker Center are involved with in this context?
Yeah, it's a very appropriate question. It's a timely question. And I think that, you know, there's been some, you know, there's some legislative attention to that question. I mean, speaking on one level, first of all, I mean, when we had more of a, a Keynesian sort of democracy and an economy here,
mm-hmm.
where there were agencies charged with upholding certain standards, right? There was safety nets in place, and looking to sort of my parents' generation, for example, where there was safety to the economy, and as we all know, that's withered away. I mean, it's non-existent. I mean. It's some employers will laugh when we say, we're going to file with the Department of Labor, because, some of the more, savvy employers know that that's not a real threat sometimes,
mm-hmm.
There's exceptions, of course, but the enforcement is sorry, and I think the fact that a community organization is taking responsibility for the Department of Labor's job, that speaks volumes to it, and it really calls the question of, what needs to happen to our government to make sure that basic human rights are being defended at work. I think that there's been a government study for the meat industry or the meatpacking industry showing again zero compliance, literally zero compliance, that the government had done its own study. Why are there not targeted investigations to the meatpacking things now? They have evidence, right? These aren't rumors or something.
Right.
But there's no impetus for it. And now that we have a new leadership in place. A lot of eyes are looking at the Department of Labor. We have some good people that have stepped in, Ilda Solis being one of them.
You're talking about in the Obama administration, the federal mm-hmm. level, that kind
yes.
of leadership,
and
also Ilda Solis, the current new Secretary of Labor.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that there is a lot to be unseen. There is some unknown. However, it does beg the question that beyond enforcement, right, we live in an unsustainable economy, that... the way this, style of, capitalism unfettered like this, it produces these, it necessarily produces these, and it always will. And so I believe our struggle is not just a workplace-based one. It's not just an enforcement-based one. It is really changing what our economy is based on.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the growing gap between, growing inequality between workers and the owners, what our CEO is making, I think it's 400 times what the average worker is making.
Something like that. The numbers
are huge. It's ludicrous. And I think but that's the inevitable result of the policies that we've pursued when we've encouraged, offshoring, when we've encouraged, deregulating, privatizing, I would say those are the three things that have led to our economy today. And, let's hope Michael Moore really, explains those things. These are tough concepts to grapple with. But I think really, privatizing things, certainly in Chicago we know about privatization and its effects. Privatizing schools, the charter schools are just beginning to organize
right.
in response to that. Looking at the parking meters and the uproar that caused. I think that's what was happening in the city level. It's neoliberalism. That's what's the guiding principle for all levels of government. I think that's part of the fight too.
Last question. For folks who want to get involved in the particular struggle that you're involved with regards to the Builder Center of Chicago and for work regarding the Worker Center and Arise Chicago generally,
right.
what can they do? How can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, the reason why we're a strong organization is precisely because we do have folks. We have workers who join us to be members. We have people from the community, students, religious people. that stand up as allies, we depend on that to be an effective group. So with regard to this, this is a very important campaign for the two workers that are owed $1,000 with the Builder Center of Chicago. We are calling for all people to come out and support them this Tuesday, September 22nd at 1 o'clock p.m. You can go to arisechicago.org to find out those details. But to come and to raise your voice with the workers to say, we want to achieve justice. This campaign, we're able to do this because of the supporters. We have many more campaigns, and we will have many more campaigns to do. We always have a need for folks to volunteer with translation. We have a need for folks to help out with, reaching out to their congregations to give workers' rights workshops. There's a number of different things. So I encourage everyone to go to risechicago.org, and you can click on the Worker Center button to find out our program specifically.
We've been speaking with Adam Cater. He is the director of the Worker Center at Arise Chicago, talking to us about the Worker Center, Arise Chicago, and matters pertaining to their work. Adam, thank you very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
That was an interview with Adam Cater of the Worker Center of Arise Chicago, recorded on September 19, 2009. Again, the website of Arise Chicago is www.arisechicago.org, spelled A-R-I-S-E, Chicago.org. Listen to all past episodes of the Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.